It is Wednesday, May 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump makes his first visit to the State Department for the swearing-in of his new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo.
It's going to be a fantastic start, a fantastic day, and that spirit will only be magnified, only with this man right here.
A United Nations team calls for the swift repatriation of thousands of Muslim Rohingya refugees to Rakhine State, and singer Ariana Grande moves forward with her career a year after the Manchester Arena bombing. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump made his first visit to the State Department Wednesday for the ceremonial swearing-in of his new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. Mr. Trump received warm applause.
I must say that's more spirit than I've heard from the State Department in a long time, many years. We can say many years, maybe many decades. It's going to be a fantastic start, a fantastic day, and that spirit will only be magnified, only with this man right here. I know that for a fact.
Trump praised the work of the State Department.
It's great to be with you, the extraordinary men and women of the State Department. We are profoundly grateful for everything you do for our country.
Meanwhile, Pompeo spoke of the efforts to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula.
Right now, we have an unprecedented opportunity to change the course of history on the Korean Peninsula. I underscore the word opportunity. We're in the beginning stages of the work, and the outcome is certainly yet unknown. But one thing is certain. This administration will not repeat the mistakes of the past. Our eyes are wide open. It's time to solve this once and for all. A bad deal is not an option. The American people are counting on us to get this right. We are committed to the permanent, verifiable, irreversible dismantling of North Korea's weapons of mass destruction program, and to do so without delay.
Pompeo has vowed to restore enthusiasm at the State Department.
When I say we're going to do this, I mean we. This is a team effort at the State Department and the whole of the United States government. Mr. President, when you offered me the job to be the director of CIA, I was honored to lead the world's finest intelligence corps, and I am incredibly honored and humbled by the opportunity to lead the world's finest diplomatic corps now.
Pompeo said the world needs a vigorous State Department.
As I've said, and I'll elaborate more, I want the State Department to get its swagger back. We need our men and women out at the front lines, executing American diplomacy with great vigor and energy, and to represent the finest nation in the history of civilization. We should be proud of that, and I'm counting on you all to help communicate in every corner of the world.
The former CIA director takes the helm of the State Department after Trump fired then-Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in March, hours after Tillerson returned from a trip to Africa. Unlike with Tillerson, Trump is said to have a close working relationship with Pompeo. Tillerson was under fire at the State Department for leaving many senior vacancies unfilled and proposing dramatic budget cuts, lowering the morale of the diplomatic workforce. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, swagger might be the best term to describe what may be going on with Kanye West, one of the biggest musical performers, stars in the United States and probably around the world. Either that or maybe a Charlie Sheen-esque meltdown. Nobody seems to be quite sure. So very quickly, Kanye had, you know, has been talking up George W. Bush. That's got some people riled up. He's admitted that he had liposuction, which is no big deal, but then he got addicted to painkillers, but he's off them now, and people are worried about what that might be doing to him, whether he's thinking clearly. And yesterday he went on this sort of rant interview with a news organization called TMZ, in which he said that slavery, 400 years of slavery, was a choice. Talking about slavery here in the United States. Everybody is responding to it on Twitter, including Kanye. The reason I brought up 400 years is because we can't be mentally imprisoned for another 400 years. Once again, I'm being attacked for presenting new ideas. Piers Morgan, shame on you, Kanye West, for betraying all black Americans with your disgustingly offensive garbage. The only choice that slaves had was to die in horror. See here, Kanye West is what happens when you build a country that devalues blackness while building up the idea that everything that is white is right. Kanye literally hates his skin and hates his skin. There's lots of people talking about it. There is also a sort of an interesting response to this, which is the hashtag slavery was a choice. A lot of African Americans are tweeting out what might be what they're kind of calling funny messages. Like if the slave master were to call them up today and say, hey, you know, get out and, you know, pick that cotton or something. And there are lots of memes and that kind of thing. And a number of African Americans are saying, you know, it may not be funny, but it's the way that we can kind of basically process something as ludicrous as this, as a prominent African American saying slavery was a choice. It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, it's got social media all riled up.
It certainly does sound like it. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Trump assails the Justice Department in a document dispute. President Trump says the issues of North Korea and trade are far more important than the Russia probe. 12 people are killed in an attack on Libya's electoral commission, and supporters of the Armenian opposition leader protest in Yerevan. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to a 2016 World Health Organization report, life expectancy globally is 71.4 years. A new study of Americans led by Harvard University has found that more than an additional decade could be tacked on to their life expectancy if they kept five healthy habits throughout adulthood. Those healthy habits identified by the researchers were eating a healthy diet, exercising regularly, maintaining a healthy body weight, not smoking, and not drinking too much alcohol. The paper, published in the American Heart Association's journal Circulation, also provides evidence that study subjects who maintained the healthiest lifestyles were 82% less likely to die from cardiovascular disease and 65% less likely to die from cancer compared to those who didn't keep such healthy lifestyles. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the World Health Organization says 7 million people die from air pollution each year. We'll have a report. A UN Security Council delegation has ended its visit to Myanmar and Bangladesh. It's calling for the creation of safe conditions to allow hundreds of thousands of displaced Muslim Rohingya refugees to return to Western Rakhine State, where they fled a security crackdown begun last August by the military of Myanmar, also known as Burma. After visiting Rakhine, holding meetings with the Bangladesh Prime Minister and de facto Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi, as well as the head of the Myanmar Army, council members held a news conference in the capital of Myanmar, Naypyidaw. UK UN Ambassador Karen Pearce called for a proper investigation into allegations of widespread atrocities by the army.
There are two ways of doing that, basically. One is an ICC, an International Criminal Court referral, as you've said. The second would be for the Burmese government to do that themselves. And we were able to raise this both with the senior general and with Dor Suu herself. Now, she was helpful. She said if there was evidence, then it should be given to the Burmese authorities and they would undertake a proper investigation. We know there have been a couple of prosecutions already. I think what would constitute a more effective response would be something that was scaled up from that. The Security Council will now go away and reflect on how best we can respond to the state controller with her offer and what the best next steps might be.
Aung San Suu Kyi promised investigations if credible evidence is provided. Military Chief Min Aung Hlaing vowed harsh action in cases of sexual violence by security forces. Vikram Nehru, a non-resident senior fellow in Southeast Asia Studies at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, the speedy, safe return of the Rohingya is the most immediate challenge, not investigating wrongdoing.
Because investigating crimes against humanity and trying to get the evidence, frankly, takes the eye off the ball. The ball is that there are a million people who are leading absolutely miserable lives and who are in danger of substantial calamity once the monsoons strike in Bangladesh because they live in exposed mud hills in ramshackled refugee townships, which are absolutely huge. And so there could be an untold and unimaginable humanitarian tragedy unless something is done quickly.
Satellite imagery, though, shows many of these villages burned to the ground.
Yes, indeed. So that's why it's relatively easy to say that these refugees must be returned or repatriated voluntarily and with safety and dignity. That's easy to say, but it's very hard to do. It's hard to do because there is no guarantee for the security of those Rohingya once they return. And there is no guarantee that they will have freedom of movement once they return. And there is no guarantee that they will have access to their fields or their livelihoods once they return. And therefore, securing all of the conditions for a secure and safe return for the Rohingya refugees will require a lot of work between the international community and the Myanmar authorities. And that's why, in my view, casting blame and naming and shaming isn't the priority at this stage. The priority at this stage is alleviating the suffering of a large number of stateless people who have been through unimaginable atrocities. And to try and alleviate their suffering will require, first of all, substantial support to Bangladesh in providing food and health and education services to these people in these refugee townships, and to work with the Myanmar authorities in a low-key way, not in big splash visits, but in a low-key way to try and establish the security conditions and the economic conditions for the return of these refugees. That is a long-haul task. It's a task that will require diplomacy, but quiet diplomacy and substantial effort at the grassroots. While the support could be given by the international community, there has to be a quid pro quo. There has to be accountability on the part of the Myanmar government to respond positively to approaches by the international community. And that is the only way forward. So it's easy to say the return of the refugees. It's very hard to do.
Vikram Nehru, non-resident senior fellow in Southeast Asia Studies at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Air pollution is killing millions of people around the world every year, with 9 out of 10 people breathing air containing high levels of pollutants. That's the conclusion from the World Health Organization's latest research on pollution, which uses data from 4,300 cities in 108 countries. As Henry Ridgewell reports, it is the poorest who are suffering most from the health effects of air pollution.
Mongolia's capital, Ulaanbaatar, is one of the most polluted cities on Earth. In winter, smoke from fires combines with fumes from factories and road traffic to create a toxic smog, which often gets trapped in the cold air. Air pollution levels can reach 100 times World Health Organization limits. Batbayar Munguntul is a mother of 3 young children living in the centre of the city. In the morning, when you open the window, she says, you smell the exhaust from cars and you don't smell any air. You are just smelling gas, and we are breathing that. The World Health Organization estimates that 7 million people die each year because of air pollution. Maria Nera is head of the WHO's Public Health Department.
We know that 4.2 million are due to exposure to outdoor air pollution, what we call ambient air pollution. So it's related to what we do at the urban level. While 3.8 million deaths are associated to the fact that many people around the world is still relying on very polluting fuels for cooking or heating or lightening their houses at the household level.
Fine particles in polluted air, such as sulfate, nitrates and black carbon, can penetrate deep into the lungs and cardiovascular system, causing diseases including stroke and heart disease, lung cancer and respiratory infections, including pneumonia. More than 90% of fatalities occurred in low- and middle-income countries, mainly in Asia and Africa, a fact WHO aggregate figures can obscure, says analyst William Avis of Britain's University of Birmingham via Skype.
When discussing air pollution, it's important to acknowledge its particular impact on, for example, the very young, the elderly, persons with pre-existing cardiac or respiratory conditions, those who live close to sources of air pollution, such as busy roads and polluting factories, and those who work in low-paid, poorly regulated jobs where occupational exposure may be higher.
Avis and university colleagues, in conjunction with African counterparts, are researching how rapid urbanisation in Addis Ababa, Kampala and Nairobi impacts air quality. By 2050, it is projected that two-thirds of the world's population will live in cities. In Mongolia, the government has begun funding air filtration systems for urban schools. Critics say that is just treating the symptoms, and authorities must do more to cut the sources of pollution. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. Sometimes good things can follow tragedy. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
We're going to premiere the brand new single off of Ariana Grande's upcoming fourth album. The song is called No Tears Left to Cry. Ariana Grande marked the one-year anniversary of a very tragic event in her career and in world history, when on May 22nd, 2017, she was performing at the Manchester Arena in England, a suicide bomber detonated a bomb after her show was ending, causing 23 deaths and over 500 injuries. Ariana hosted a television benefit concert called One Love Manchester about a month later and raised over $23 million for the victims and their families. And she was also named an honorary citizen of Manchester. She's been here in D.C. Recently, I guess a couple of months ago, she performed at the anti-gun rally that took place in Washington, D.C. and around the United States, hosted by all of these high school kids, started by the Parkland, Florida tragedy as well. So she's been involved with all of these different events. This song, the new song, was inspired by the Manchester bombing and the tragedy that took place there, and it's called No Tears Left to Cry. So we're going to listen to it right now.
Well, this whole experience must have been very tragic, very poignant for her to remember, for her and the families of those people that were killed and or injured in this.
Yes, and she's done her part as an honorary citizen of Manchester. She's kind of visited with a lot of the victims and their families, and she was embraced. Her album Dangerous Woman, the sales of the album increased. It was up near the top two or three albums at the time as well, because they loved Ariana, and she was kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time, where somebody wanted to send out their message during a pop concert. knowing that this was going to affect a lot of young people who attend pop concerts. So this was a devastating event for her and, you know, as I say, for the whole community at large, her fans around the world, for everyone involved. Now, Ariana, her career has been great. I mean, you know, this is going to be the fourth album when it comes out. We don't know the name of it yet. This is the lead single from the new album. No Tears Left to Cry is the song. It debuted on the Billboard charts at number 3. It's the 9th song in her career to hit the top 10 on Billboard. It debuted at number 1 on iTunes. If the song is, in fact, the lead single from her studio album, she'll be the only artist ever to have debuted the first single from her first 4 albums in the top 10. The only artist ever to do that. She has 55 million Twitter followers, making her the 14th most followed person on Twitter. Her videos have been viewed a total of 9 billion times. And as far as awards and accolades go, she's got 3 American Music Awards, 3 Euro Music Awards from MTV. She's got 4 Grammy nominations, and she was Billboard's 2017 Female Artist of the Year. So she's definitely got a lot of accolades, including 2016. Time Magazine put her in their 100 Most Influential People issue as well. So Ariana Grande, she's back. Dangerous Woman was out in 2016. It's been a couple of years. She has been romantically involved with a rapper, Mac Miller. There are rumors that they're engaged. There were other rumors she's pregnant. She is not pregnant. As far as the engagement goes, we don't know. But they're happy, and that's all that really matters at this time.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After nearly 50 years of military rule, Burma's democratic transition continues to face many challenges, including atrocities and other serious human rights abuses in Rakhine State committed against the Rohingya minority. In his remarks marking the release of the annual State Department Human Rights Report, then Acting Secretary of State John Sullivan condemned the ethnic cleansing of Rohingya and all the atrocities committed against them. The U.S. is working with its partners to address the crisis and hold those responsible accountable. The Human Rights Report for Burma notes that in early August, some security forces deployed throughout northern Rakhine State committed enforced disappearances and arbitrary arrests and displaced villagers, the majority of whom were Rohingya. On August 25th, the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army claimed responsibility for coordinated attacks against 30 security outposts in northern Rakhine State, killing 12 security personnel. Security forces, as well as local vigilante groups acting independently or in concert with security forces, then committed widespread atrocities against Rohingya villagers, including extrajudicial killings, disappearances, rape, torture, arbitrary arrest, and burning of tens of thousands of homes and some religious structures and other buildings. This forced nearly 700,000 Rohingya to flee to neighboring Bangladesh as of April 18th, as well as an unknown number of ethnic minority groups to be displaced within Rakhine State. The Burma Human Rights Report documented other significant human rights abuses in 2017. Unlawful killings, politically motivated arrests, authorities' human rights violations against civilians in other ethnic minority areas, particularly in Kachin State and Shan State, Journalists have suffered intimidation and arrest. Freedom of religion, speech, and assembly continued to be restricted. Harsh conditions in prisons and labor camps persisted. Statelessness for some populations and severe restrictions on freedom of movement continued. The government still criminalized same-sex sexual activities, and trafficking in persons continued to be an issue. The protection of human rights is crucial to the success of any democracy. The United States wants Burma's democracy to succeed, and it is critical that the government continue reforms and demonstrate respect for human rights, including the rights of its Rohingya minority.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.